Hey everyone, welcome back to Heinous Beliefs, the podcast where we peel back the layers of some of the most twisted crimes in history. Crimes fueled by belief systems, especially the kinds that make you question people's realities. I'm your host, Rhea, and today we're diving into a case that's equal parts horrifying and mind-boggling. It's the story of Carrie Steiner, aka the Yosemite Sightings Killer. Yeah, but before we get into it today, heads up, you guys, this episode is going to be heavy. Listener discretion is advised. We're talking murder, sexual assault, and some seriously dark stuff. If that's not your vibe today, no hard feelings. Skip this one. If you guys would like to show back up next week, great. But if you can't take an episode like this, please make sure you're choosing your battles and you're taking care of yourself. But if you're going to be sticking around and you're ready, buckle up. Get your tea, get your coffee, eyes on the road, because this one is a wild one, okay? Let's get into it. All right, so Carrie Steiner grew up in Merced, California, a small, quiet town near the Yosemite National Park, the kind of place where life moves slow, people knew your business before you did, and crime was not front page news, okay? Until one family tragedy changed all of that. In Carrie's childhood, let's just say it wasn't all sunshine and baseball games. His younger brother, Stephen, was kidnapped in 1990. Not just for a few days or even months, 7 years. Stephen was kidnapped for 7 years by a monster named Kenneth Parnell. That's a whole childhood stolen from this little boy. Stephen finally escaped in 1980, bringing another kidnapped boy, Timothy White, with him. And when he got home, the whole country treated him like a hero. There were news specials about him, books, interviews, and even a movie called I Know My First Name is Stephen. Sounds like a feel-good ending, right? Not for Carrie. While Stephen was on the news and in the spotlight, Carrie was forgotten. Your little brother comes home from hell itself, mind you, and suddenly nobody sees you anymore. That's bound to leave some kind of resentment. The Steiner household was not any better. It wasn't like some warm for... It wasn't a safe place for these children anyway. It wasn't a warm home. They weren't looking forward to coming home after school. It was that kind of family. Their father was strict, bordering on abusive. Carrie later claimed that he was molested by his uncle, but no one did anything about it because there was no quote-unquote proof. What we do know is that he developed some serious coping mechanisms. He would strip naked and roam the woods behind his house. Sometimes his father would, you know, try to get him back in the house. His family would try to get him back. Sometimes they just ignored him. Meanwhile, he started to become obsessed with true crime, specifically the ones that had to do with violence against women. Yeah, red flag maybe number 500. I don't know. As he grew up, Carrie's behavior got more disgusting. He just got worse over time. He wasn't just a quiet kid anymore. He was the kid with dark thoughts. He openly talked about how he wanted to kill women to his classmates, but people just brushed it off. He's just a weird kid. He likes to talk, right? He developed an obsession with Bigfoot later on, telling people that he saw Bigfoot lurking in the woods. Now, if he was actually seeing things, or if this was just his way to cope with, you know, detaching from reality, we don't know. Either way, he was slipping into his own world and nobody really seemed to notice or care. And when Stephen tragically died in a motorcycle accident in 1989, that was it. Whatever was keeping Carrie together started to unravel. But let me be clear, his issues, right, in general, was not just about his sibling rivalry, whatever, like I'm missing my brother, blah, blah, blah. This man was sick, okay? His issues went way deeper. Now, fast forward 1999, Carrie Steiner is now in his mid-30s, working as a handyman at the Cedar Lodge, a cozy little motel outside of the Yosemite Yosemite National Park. This is the kind of place where families stop for the night to take in fresh air from the mountains and plan their adventures for the national park, right? But while these guests were enjoying their vacation, Carrie was sitting on years of bottled up rage, violent tendencies, and just a combination of his personal beliefs. I'm kind of confused on why people feel like it makes sense for you to enact your anger on other people, especially people that don't have anything to do with where you're coming from and your life experiences. But let's talk about one of his victims, you guys. So here I'm going to give a trigger warning. This is where the murders kind of come in. So if you don't want to listen to this part, you can go ahead and skip maybe a minute or two. I'm not sure how long it'll take, but I'll put the transcript on there. Maybe you guys can look at it. Now, so at that motel, Carol's son, a successful real estate investor, her 15-year-old daughter, Julie, and Julie's best friend, Silvana Peloso, a 16-year-old exchange student from Argentina. The three of them were on what should have been a girls' trip. They were supposed to enjoy the adventures of the Yosemite National Park. On February 15, 1999, all three of them disappeared, just like that. No phones, no signs, no struggle, just gone. And funny thing, their rooms were in pristine condition. They were all clean, okay? Beds were made, everything. Like, it just was like no one was in there. No one had been in there. No one had used the beds, the sink, none of it. It was all clean. It didn't take long for alarm bells to start going off because these people were already registered to have been staying there. And for them to just completely disappear, family members called in, all that stuff. You know, people were looking for them. So then the FBI, the local law enforcement, the park rangers, volunteers, everybody was on high alert. Flyers were posted, news stations picked up the story, and even people across the country were following every update. But weeks passed and there was nothing, no clue, no leads, no ideas where, you know, people were not calling in to give tips or anything like that, at least helpful ones. No idea where these three women had gone. Then on March 18, 1999, the nightmare got real. Carol's son's wallet was found hundreds of miles away in Modesto, California. This is the mom, okay? This wasn't just a lost and found situation. It was clear evidence that something terrible had happened to this woman. And then after that, they confirmed the worst news. Their entire car was discovered burned to a crisp in one of the forests nearby the Yosemite National Park. And inside of it was Carol and Savannah. So the mom and the daughter's best friend, okay? They were found in the trunk of the car, but they were both strangled as well. A few days later, Julie's body was discovered dumped off the secluded road. She had been separated from the others. Instead of being strangled, though, she had been shot in the head. It was a calculated crime. But the nightmare did not end there. Just 4 months later, on July 1st, 1999, Yosemite was hit with another horrifying tragedy. Joey Ruth Armstrong, a 26-year-old naturalist, she was an environmental educator, right? You know, pretty much the one of the people that will tell you about every single leaf on the tree and will tell you about every mushroom. Yeah, she was living out her dreams, working in one of the most beautiful national parks in the country. She loved her job. She loved nature. She was the kind of person who would light up the room. You know, they say that about everybody, right? That's the clip that I heard over and over again. She was the kind of person that will light up a room. So take that as you may. But none of that mattered when Carrie Steiner decided that she was going to be his next victim. One night, Carrie spotted Joey at her rustic cabin in the woods, and something just told him that it was time to approach her. He approached her, and as she tried to fight back, he overpowered her, forcing her into his car. But Joey wasn't just going to go down without a fight, okay? She managed to escape from the vehicle, running for her life through the woods. But Carrie caught up with her, and what he did next was pure evil, okay? He slashed her throat and then decapitated her, leaving her body near a creek. He placed her head a few feet away from her body. The crime scene was so gruesome, and the entire community was paralyzed by it. The two brutal, high-profile murders were months apart. Yosemite wasn't supposed to be a place of terror, but now it was a hunting ground for a serial killer. Law enforcement was under so much pressure because obviously these are people that their families are looking for, and it's just, they have to do something. So there's a lot of pressure for them to find this person and get them off the street. At this point, the park was closed down as a crime scene, at least certain parts of it, okay? People still had their trails and all of that stuff, but certain parts of it was blocked off. And the clock was ticking to catch whoever was responsible for these murders before they did it again. Then in July 1999, he finally got caught. When I say he spilled the beans, yeah, he was ready to talk to somebody. I mean, he practically gave the FBI a front row seat to his own horror show. No hesitation, no remorse. He just laid it all out like he'd been waiting to tell somebody forever. And the way he described it, like he was just telling a story. He was proud of what he had done. Carrie admitted that he had tricked Carol's sons by knocking on her motel room and pretending to be a maintenance guy who needed to fix a leak. She let him in, probably thinking he was just gonna fix something. He's a harmless handyman. He'll just go and fix something and leave. But once he was inside, everything went south. He overpowered her, tied her up, and strangled her. Then he turned his attention on Julie and Savannah. These teenagers, these kids, he threatened them like it was nothing. He sexually assaulted Savannah before killing her and then forced Julie into his car. So for Carol and Savannah, he strangled them, right? But for Julie, he takes Julie into his car and he drives her into the woods. He keeps her for about 24 hours. I wouldn't even say 24 hours. He just keeps her overnight, okay? He keeps her overnight before deciding that he was going to pretty much kill her. So he shoots her in the head and he left her there, but then goes back to the motel and transports the other two into the car. He takes them into the car and then drives it a few miles away, like I think a few hundred miles away, and then sets the car on fire. He goes back to the hotel room and cleans it up. That's why the room was found in pristine condition, okay? And now we're gonna go to the story of Joey Armstrong. Joey Armstrong was even more brutal. This wasn't a motel room crime like the other one. This was broad daylight, okay? Outside in her cabin in Yosemite. Carrie saw her, stalked her, and decided that she was gonna be the next. This was a random woman. He doesn't know her, right? She works at the park and she's pretty much fair game to him at this point. He confronted her, restrained her, and forced her into his car. But Joey, she was a fighter, like I said. So while she's in his car, she somehow figures out a way to break out, probably thinking that she had a shot at escaping. But Carrie wasn't about to let her go, okay? Because he's that fucked up. He catches up with her and tackles her to the ground. And in a frenzied rage, this man is full of hatred and rage, and he slits her throat so viciously that it decapitates her. He goes ahead to decapitate her, and then he leaves her for dead, leaves her head a few feet away from her body, just like it was nothing. And to me, that just sounds like he picked up the head and then puts it down later, right? Like he just picks it up, walks a few feet, and then drops her head somewhere. I still don't know what would be going through someone's head like this, but we'll find out. We will find out what kind of human being this is, okay? Now, here's what Carrie said was happening. Carrie actually thought that he was doing God's work. Remember, he's still confessing to the FBI agents, okay? Remember, he's still talking to the investigators at this point. He's yapping his mouth and he's happy about what he did. Okay. And his justification was that he was doing God's work. Yep, you heard me right. He believed that by murdering these women, he was somehow cleansing the world of sin. In his mind, he wasn't just a killer. He was some kind of prophet on a divine mission. He even told the investigators, "I'm not a bad person. I just did some bad things, but this was all ordained by God." Like, excuse me, that's not necessarily how that works, okay? And it doesn't stop there. Carrie later tried to sell the whole, "I've been struggling with urges my whole life, blah, 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 blah." But let's be real. He wasn't some helpless pawn in, you know, an evil game. No, there was no spiritual anything using him to do anything, right? He chose to do this. He planned it out. And he controlled every single aspect of it. There was no God or devil making him do any of this. But his claim was that he was doing God's work and he was cleansing this world of sin. He lived a double life, smiling at a tourist every day and fantasizing about killing them as well. Because he did work at that motel. He worked close to the park. So people were coming and going, and this man was supposed to be a friendly face. Imagine the handyman at, you know, at a motel, at a hotel. You just kind of see them in passing. But no, this one was plotting to just annihilate whoever he came across, especially women. He didn't even try to run. In fact, he almost seemed relieved, like he was happy to finally tell someone what he did. He just wanted the attention. That's a whole new level of messed up. So during his trial, Carrie's defense team threw everything at the wall, hoping that somehow they would have some kind of mercy on him. But the persecution was not happening, okay? They were not buying a single word coming out of these people's mouth. And the whole God's work excuse was not working here. The idea that he was on some kind of divine mission to get rid of sin in the world, that was nothing cheap to sell, okay? No one is going to be believing that in 2025. The last ditch effort he had was to plead insanity. That didn't work either. At the end of the day, it was damn near impossible to feel sorry for this guy, okay? He brutally murdered 4 innocent people. But here's the kicker. You can't ignore that his life was a perfect storm and trauma-filled. His childhood wasn't just rough, it was a breeding ground for instability. And his father was a very crucial instrument in this, especially with his religious beliefs, because he always will drill into his family that they were to obey the words of God. His mental health was not important, right? The children necessarily didn't have the environment to talk about what they were going through, especially Stephen, even though Stephen does end up dying, right? Which is tragic. I wish he had a full life after the things that he went through. But even when Stephen dies, it doesn't necessarily change anything in this family. They still are just detached from reality and they're not helping their child in any way, okay? It was a breeding ground for insane. But this does not make what he did any better. I'm just trying to explain the kind of environment that he's coming from, especially from a religious one that's not going to prioritize your mental health while you're going through all of those things. They painted a picture of a guy whose brain had been broken since childhood. Now, thankfully, Sanner was tried separately for the murders of Joey Armstrong in federal court and the murders of Sud Peloso family in California state court. In September of 2000, he pleaded guilty in federal court for Armstrong's murder and was sentenced to life in prison without parole. Woo-hoo. Now, thankfully, Turner was tried separately for the murder of Joey Armstrong in federal court and the murders of Sud Peloso in California state court. September 2000, he pleaded guilty in federal court for the Armstrong murder and he was sentenced to life in prison without parole. In 2022, after the trial, Steiner was convicted of the three other murders and was sentenced to death. The jury only deliberated for about 5 hours before they came back and unanimously decided that he was going to be sentenced to death. Steiner is currently sitting on death row at the San Quentin State Prison awaiting execution. However, though, due to California's new law that was passed, it is unlikely that he will be ever executed. There was a moratorium on the death penalty placed in California, but even behind bars, Steiner continues to insist that his crimes were divinely guided. In 2017, he had an interview where he stated, "I still believe I was doing God's work. His lack of remorse and refusal to accept responsibility make him one of the most chilling killers in history." And honestly, that's not surprising coming from a believer, coming from someone that holds faith, because there's no other way for you to falsify what he's saying, right? If he believes that God is ordaining his actions, who are you to say God is not? Like, you don't know the kind of conversations that he has with the God. I know a lot of the times believers say, "Well, that's not a real Christian. That's not a real Muslim. That's not, they don't believe what I believe," right? We're not the same. I don't know. At the end of the day, all you have is belief. All you have to give to me is that you believe in the thing. And there's no way for me to say, "Oh, actually, there's no deity talking to you," because I don't live in your head, right? But the thing is, anybody can walk up and say, "Oh yeah, I'm just going to go on a murder spree because there is a God in my head telling me to do so." Even though if we were to do some kind of analysis, all we're going to find is that you're the only one talking to yourself, right? But because you've put a deity there, you've put a spiritual being there, now no one wants to question what you're doing, how cruel he actually was. But you guys, again, this is why I would never be in favor of adults with imaginary friends, because that imaginary friend can tell you to do whatever the fuck and you're going to do it. They want a babysitter, they want a father, they want somebody to back up how bigoted they are. And you guys, I don't know how else to explain how I'm never going to be behind adults with imaginary friends. Anyway, that is it for today, guys. If you've got some thoughts on this episode, go ahead and interact on the Instagram. Again, we're still waiting on the Patreon and Apple Podcast subscription. Apple is giving me a hard time, so I don't want to have it on Patreon just yet and not Apple Podcast. I want to release them at the same time. So please watch out for that. It's coming hopefully next week. They keep giving me a 7-day period to wait, but I've been waiting forever. Okay. I've been waiting forever. So you guys watch out for that. And also make sure that you're interacting on the Instagram page. If you want to see pictures of the cases that we talk about on here, you want to put a face to the names, go ahead and look on the Instagram page. I might configure it a little bit where I put the exact names for the exact people on there, but I don't know how I'm gonna fit it on there. I will figure something out. But yeah, I'm about to hop off here. Thank you guys for listening. If you stayed this long, I appreciate you. Again, please make sure you're taking care of yourself. Please make sure you're looking at the resources in the show notes. If you need any of those resources, please go ahead and use them. And also, I want to say thank you guys so much for all the support. I hit K listens, I think 2 days ago or a day ago, I can't remember. And I just want to say thank you guys so much. I appreciate you. Thank you for sharing the podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for clicking that play button. I appreciate you. And I thank you so much for just being here. Y'all know I'm never going to stop saying thank you. I'm going to say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you over and over again until I can't say it anymore. Okay. Bye, you guys. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.